atop the Van Dam building in the heart of Ronville. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting. Yowza, yowza, yowza.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Yowza.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I don't know what yowza means, neither do you. Hey, welcome to the program of enormous proportions. Look at the size of this thing. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess which one I am? No guesses? What's going on? It's amazing how much energy I have in the morning, and then by the end of the day, none. Just none. I expend it very quickly. I record these shows in the morning, by the way. You know, it's the same day kind of thing, but, you know, so I do them in the morning, and you can listen to it anytime during the day. So in the morning, I have so much energy and vitality, and by like 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm done. I'm just done. I can't. I try not even to take a shower after 8 o'clock in the morning because it's just too much of an effort to raise my arms to put the soap on me. All right. Every once in a while, I introduce the people to make this show possible. I do a little something. And then there's Jason Shaw. He's the musical background, the theme, the closing theme, some of the incidental music, incidentally. Jason Shaw, ladies and gentlemen, give it up. Then there's a lovely and talented John Shanahan, comedy writer, radio man himself. He's got the Hypnagogue podcast going for himself as well. Excellent stuff. John Shanahan, ladies and gentlemen. Then there's a lovely and talented Nicole Reed. She's the British voice that you hear at the beginning of the program, although, to be honest with you, she's not British. And she books many of the national interviews that we do on this program. And those are just some of the people that make this all possible. Then there's my dentist. I want to thank my dentist for telling me that if I don't floss, that my teeth will fall out. Thanks a lot for that encouragement. And then, of course, what makes the show possible is my doctor, who tells me that it's amazing that I'm still walking upright. And if I complain about something hurting on my body, my doctor says, well, you're getting older. That's it. It's the whole deal. And then there's my gastroenterologist, I think that's what they call them, who tells me that I need to get colonoscopy every once in a while. Lie down. We're coming in. And that's about it, babe. Then I also have a dermatologist who says, stay out of the sun. Put a lot of cream on your face. Keep your fingers crossed. I mean, come on. Hey, you have a life too. You know what I'm talking about, right? Unless you're a millennial. Or what do they call the new one now? Millennial Plus? Generation W? What is it? What do they call this thing now? If you're born like now, what are you? What the hell are you? Yeah, you people in your teens, in your lower 20s, enjoy. Have a good time while you can. I'm telling you, watch out. What you do to your body now is wonderful, but later on, it's going to pay the price. It's time to pay the piper. You be careful now. That's my advice to you. And floss, otherwise your teeth will fall out. I have a very interesting guest today. It's an extended interview because when I was interviewing this gentleman, I couldn't stop doing it. He's fascinating. You know, I've walked the planet many, many decades now for about 300 years. And I'm pretty familiar with the stuff above ground. But stuff where there's no ground involved, like the ocean, I don't know anything about it. I really have never been on it. I can't walk on water. I mean, I'm incredible, but not that good. I don't like to go underwater. I still can't go underwater and open my eyes. I keep thinking that the water is going to seep in through my eyes and flood me. I have that vision in my head. I don't understand how that wouldn't be possible. So I've never seen underwater before. Really haven't, unless, you know, it's in a movie or someone shot a video. Am I scared of the water? I'm not scared. I just don't see the point of going under it. I swim on it. That's enjoyable sometimes. But under it, what's the point? I'm not a fish. I have no gills. I have no fins. What the hell am I trying to do here? So no, I don't go under it. I do. I respect people that put on the gear and dive, and there's an entire world under the water. Or in the water, I should say. Under the water, in the water, whatever. There's an entire world down there. I think there's even a couple of McDonald's, a CVS, and a Dunkin' Donuts. I think even they have some down there too. I don't know. I've not been down there. Maybe a Taco Bell. They might have a Taco Bell as well. I'm not sure. They don't have a drive-through. They have a swim-through. Okay. Anyway, there's an entire life thing. It's like a separate planet down there. There's like things that I've never seen before, and they all scare out of me. A shark doesn't have to swim up to me for me to freak out. Oh no, no, no! I'm freaked out by a jellyfish, by a minnow, anything. Because I can't swim, they can. Already, I am outdone by these creatures. I'm in their world. I am not. The only time they come into my world is when I'm eating seafood in a restaurant. Other than that, we don't cross paths at all. So I have a marine biologist on the program who has written an incredible book about, are you ready for this? Octopuses. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the proper way of saying it, but a lot of octopus. Those creatures are so freaky looking. I cannot imagine. He has done an incredible study on them as to how they live, how they defend themselves, what they eat, what they do, where they go to school. It's incredible that the information that he has gathered and research about octopuses. If I saw one up close that was alive, I'd probably shit my pants. I can't think of any other reason that I would do something like that. Maybe after Indian food, I might do that by mistake. But anyway, that was yesterday's show. But anyway, so he's into it, man. So we're going to speak to him momentarily. He'll be joining us. I think that'll be fascinating. That's my opinion. That's my opinion. Anyway, that's coming up momentarily in about, 7 minutes. Can you say 7 minutes? Oh, I met this this young lady. It was in a professional thing. Not what you're thinking. But I met her in a situation. And she had a speech pattern that just drove me crazy to the point where I really felt like saying, Oh my God, learn how to talk, will you? Such an annoying kind of thing. I felt like telling her just to shut up, you know?
Shut up!
Seriously. Whenever I asked her a question, I would say something like, I don't remember what I said. Something like, I was like, do you go to this place often? And her response was, I want to say, I don't. Mm-hmm. And what is your name? I want to say it's Mary. And how many times do you come here and order the same thing? I want to say six times, but I can't. Why don't you just say it? Why do you say that you want to say it? I don't know. Her speech, it was just, and every single question was answered with, well, I want to say, then say it. If you want to say it, then say it. My God. It annoyed me so much. It annoyed me to the point where obviously I'm still annoyed. I don't like when people fall into speech patterns, but it's the same thing all the time. There was this guy that used to say literally all the time. Are you going, you're going to go home and rest a little bit? I literally am going to go home and rest. Okay. What are you having for dinner? I'm literally going to have spaghetti. I'm going to have spaghetti. And I'm literally going to have spaghetti. I want to say spaghetti. I can't say it because I can't form the words with my lips, but I want to say spaghetti. These things are so annoying. But you can't say anything to them because you can't change a speech pattern that's embedded in their personality. It's people who use like all the time. I went downstairs. I'm like eating a sandwich. I'm like looking for the mayonnaise. I'm like spreading it on the bread. I want to say I'm spreading it on the bread. I'm literally spreading it on the bread. Oh my God, stop it. Stop it. We have a short commercial break, ladies and gentlemen, and then my guest will be joining us. So, are you ready for the commercial break? It's not going to be pretty, but here we go.
We don't get to choose our family names. We're born into them, and some of them are, quite frankly, a little embarrassing. For many, a burden that follows them through life. If you've got an embarrassing last name, you may have thought about having it legally changed, but perhaps you've thought it might be complicated and expensive. Well, I'm here to tell you that having your last name legally changed is simple and cost-effective and will take that lifelong burden away in just a few easy steps. Call me today, Attorney Jim Cockwaffle, with the offices of Cockwaffle and Cumstein. We know what you're going through.
Dr. David Shield joins us now. He is a PhD, a professor of marine biology at Alaska Pacific University, and he knows everything there is about marine life. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Dr. Shield, we're talking about one of the weirdest animals as far as kids are concerned, and that would be the octopus. Is it octopuses or octopi? I never knew.
Yeah, it's octopuses. That's okay. A very common question, actually. The plurals, the Latin plural would be irregular in English.
Okay.
The I.
How did you become a marine biologist? What forced you into that interest, into that field?
You know, I've been interested in marine biology since I was a kid. Well, yeah. I used to read science fiction. A lot, and I thought the probably the weirdest animals on Earth I could study would be in the ocean. They'd be more like aliens than anything else.
Indeed. Indeed, that's the case. You actually have put out quite an interesting publication, Many Things Under a Rock, The Mysteries of Octopuses. This is going to. I'm intrigued simply by the title and the subject matter. To be honest with you,
good.
Yeah. have you had many encounters with them? I assume you have.
Yes. Many Things Under a Rock is kind of kind of an allusion to the fact that encountering octopuses can lead you in a lot of different directions. Yeah. I have had a lot of interactions with octopuses over the years. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I originally started out doing was just walking the beaches at low tide here in Alaska and looking for them, because that's how they were. They are harvested by subsistence users here in Alaska for food. And it was a little bit frustrating because I would see a lot of signs of octopuses, but the only octopuses I ever found were hiding under rocks. And I really wanted to learn more about their behavior. And eventually I was able to get to a point where I could work with octopuses underwater a little more. And
yes.
It's been a lot more exciting and interesting. Yeah.
Fascinating. I'm going to ask you the question that I've been wanting to ask. How large do octopuses actually get?
Well, the biggest species in the world is the one we have up here in Alaska, the giant Pacific octopus. And, you know, generally, I mean, all of them start out very small. Their eggs are the size of a grain of rice or a little bit bigger.
Oh.
And then they grow. So we see a lot of small octopuses, but the big ones can get up over 100 pounds.
Wow. And with their reach with the tentacles, is it as massive as what we see in the science fiction movies?
You know, there's kind of a seamless blend from scientific fact into legend and science fiction, in the sense that the very biggest records become maybe increasingly questionable as objective, verified fact. And then pretty soon you get into genuine, legitimate mistakes. Right. And then above that, you get into pure, outright fantasy.
Yes.
And so there's a wonderful account of a carcass that washed ashore in Florida in the 1890s. And it was found by a fellow named DeWitt. And it had sort of long tendrils of flesh on it. And it weighed several tons. And he described it and sent photographs to A.E. Verrill at the Smithsonian, who is a guy who studied giant squids. And Verrill published an account of this and called it Octopus giganteus. Mm. And then DeWitt sent him a tissue sample. Mm-hmm. And when that arrived in Washington and Verrill opened it up, he smelled rancid whale oil. And he immediately realized his mistake. And this beaten up carcass that had been washed ashore in a giant storm was actually the remains of a whale and not an octopus.
Yeah.
But Octopus giganteus lives on in legend.
Well, that's fun, at least in theory.
Right. It's a great story. It's a great story.
Yeah. I most lay people know nothing about the octopus's life at all. I'll ask you a couple of quick questions, and then, because this makes the book incredibly fascinating, I got to tell you. Do they have any large predators? Who are their predators, and what do octopuses prey upon?
Yeah, because they start out small, and they have no bones.
Oh.
They're all meat. Oh. They're kind of a little package of protein, and everything eats them. By the time they get larger, of course, they have fewer predators, but they're still eaten by dolphins and sharks.
Okay.
And so even a very large octopus is always under threat of predation.
I understand.
Themselves, they eat the kind of seafood we enjoy. They eat, you know, mussels and clams and scallops and crabs, the occasional fish. And once in a great rare while, they even snag a bird and eat that.
Wow. And perhaps a glass of wine. No, maybe not.
It would go well.
Because it did sound pretty tasty. Of course, white wine. I'm a lay person. I don't understand the difference between an octopus and a squid. And I think a lot of people have that question.
Yeah, the squid and their relatives, cuttlefish, are a little more above the bottom and swimming in the water column than the octopuses. And so they prey more on things like fish that are very accomplished, directed and fast escape artists. And so the squid and the cuttlefish have, in addition to having eight arms, they have two tentacles that can shoot out very fast and clap together to catch an escaping fish. And the suckers, or in the squid, in some cases, hooks, are only present at the tips of the tentacles. Octopuses, more on the bottom, chasing somewhat slower prey most of the time, like scallops and crabs. Uh-huh. And then they have the eight arms, but no tentacles.
Okay. So they're not related really in any sense?
Well, they're cousin groups in the sense that they're together, they're all cephalopods.
Okay. The most famous action that an octopus gives is, does the octopus squirt ink, or is that the squid?
They can both squirt ink, yeah. Most octopuses do have ink sacs and use ink in escape.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's actually, when we say ink, I mean, is that like real ink?
Well, it's a fascinating thing. It's a mixture of two different materials. One is melanin, which is the pigment. That's mm-hmm. the same pigment we have in our skins, and it's the same pigment in the octopus's skin. And the other one is mucus. And the mucus helps the melanin hold together in the water. So when the octopus is threatened and it's fleeing and it squirts out some ink, it creates a little blob of mucus and ink that hangs together mm-hmm. momentarily in the water. And that blob is usually just about the same size as the fleeing octopus. Mm. And the octopus will then abruptly change direction so that the predator, suddenly, when it's following the octopus visually, suddenly its attention is on this now stationary dark blob of ink.
Gotcha.
And they'll often bite into that instead of the fleeing octopus.
Very interesting. On the downside, our planet is changing, and marine biologists probably know that as much or more than anybody, to be honest with you. How is that how is that affecting what's going on under there?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the news there is probably not, in the long run, going to be very good.
Yeah.
Right now, however, octopuses have not been quite as much the same target of fisheries as so many of the fish in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And we've removed, since World War II, we've removed so many fish from the ocean that octopuses and squid actually seem to have been in an upsurge and become more abundant and more common. But as we enter this age of having visible and measurable climate change, we're able to see that, you know, particularly up here in Alaska, the warmer oceans seem to be resulting in fewer octopuses. So I think we're on the precipice for octopuses. Things are okay right now, but we need to change the direction we're going if we want things to be okay in another 50 or 80 years.
Yeah. Where can one see an octopus or encounter one? Well, I guess you'd have to be quite deep to see one, but where do they congregate, so to speak?
Yeah, most of the familiar octopuses that we know are actually shallow water species that live along our continental shelves.
Oh.
And so, you know, up here in Alaska, I've found them intertidally, and then, you know, they're at 10 feet deep, they're in tide pools, they're at 60 feet deep, and so on down. There are deep sea species mm-hmm. as well. And of course, there on the eastern seaboard, you have several wonderful aquariums like the New England Aquarium and the National Aquarium that will usually have an octopus on display, although maybe not always.
Sure. Do you know of any incidents where a human was attacked by an octopus in a certain situation?
There have been some instances. Generally, you know, it's a little hard to tell what exactly is going on. Mm-hmm. There's an account in many things under a rock. And then you also have instances when a person is not necessarily attacked by an octopus, but nevertheless can be harmed. The blue ring octopuses, which are in sort of Indonesian waters down to Australian waters are very toxic. And so I once heard an account of a fella who had found one of these little tiny guys, and they're very beautifully colored. That's their warning sign: don't touch. But he was he had put it up on his neck and was showing off to his girlfriend or something like that on the beach after they'd come ashore, and the octopus bit him. And their toxin is very fast acting nerve toxin that stopped the man from breathing for a little while. But you know, you can't last very long if you don't have that. And so the some of the poisons in some octopuses can kill a person.
Showing off to your girlfriend, putting an octopus on your neck also is a problem, I would think.
It's not kind to the octopus.
No, nor to the human, I guess, in the long run.
And I suspect the girlfriends know that.
I wonder if they're together. Probably not. We could talk for a long time because I have tons of questions, but this is just reaching the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, of what's in the book. It's fascinating. It really, really is. It's Many Things Under a Rock, The Mysteries of Octopuses. And it's just, it takes you out of your human life and puts you somewhere else. And that's how you learn and that's how you experience. So thank you for doing this. You have been doing this for a long time, haven't you?
I have. I started working with octopuses in 1995.
Wow. Well, continued many more years of fascination to you. The book's available.
Thank you.
Book's available everywhere, I assume?
Yes, it's available everywhere. Today is the release date.
So hey.
It's on sale now in bookstores everywhere.
Wow. Use that glass of wine that I was just talking about earlier. Seriously. Dr. Scheel, is there some way that someone can check out a website or something like that?
Yes, I have a webpage, alaskaoctopus.com, with links to the book, Many Things Under a Rock, and more information about my work.
Perfect. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and continued success to you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, that'll do it for me today. You've been wonderful about this. You really have. Your tolerance level is incredible. You should be commended somehow. I should be putting a gold star on your forehead, which is, by the way, very embarrassing. I know there's the Ash Wednesday thing, you know, where you put a little smudge of dirt on your face. And for a long time, I didn't know what that was because I'm not of that religious persuasion. And I used to walk up to people and say, "Excuse me, you got a little bit of dirt on your forehead? That's a religious thing, you idiot." I didn't know. I'm sorry, I didn't know. Did the same thing with the gold star. I used to see these children walking around grammar school with little gold stars on their head. And I used to think, my God, it's a children's cult. It's like Children of the Corn. No, Ron, they do that like in kindergarten. If you do something good, they put a little gold star on your head. I don't know if they still do that. When I was growing up, they did that. A lot of kids walking around with gold stars on their heads. I thought they were like specially born or something like that, or that's how to designate which school bus to get on. I have no idea what the gold star was, but now I understand. All right, that's enough. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. But until that time arrives, oh my God, take care of yourself. There's a lot of stuff that can happen to you, so just be really careful. I'm serious. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.